Hello and welcome to Eureka Nerd. We are back and I am still Will.
And I am still Leah.
It is good to be back. We have enjoyed our summer as much as anyone can enjoy being sat inside not doing very much, but we're all joined together in that at least, so...
I mean, to be fair, we are nerds, so we spend an awful lot of time indoors anyway, and you downloaded Splatoon 2 on the Switch, so we've just been squid-kidding about.
This is very true. We've made the most of the situation, because during the ongoing...
We probably can just say the COVID-19 pandemic, which we're all living through.
Now, there is that, yes. We have all had to make some changes to how we live and how we conduct our business, and that is still true for scientists, for researchers, and for the people at the Ig Nobel Prizes. The team behind Improbable Research have made some adjustments to their prizes this year and conducted the whole thing online. This goes above and beyond the usual webcast they do, which is normally broadcast live from a theatre, but this time it's all been done remotely, and you can watch the whole thing on YouTube, or stick around and we'll tell you all about it now.
This isn't the most recent research that people are being awarded prizes for, so you may well know some of this stuff already.
Some of this stuff you may just know innately, and by having to ask the question, hey, is this true? You would go, well, of course it's true. Why would you even have to, like, try and find that out? What experiments would you do to try and prove that point?
Or, of course, the Medical Education Prize, for example, which you will probably have realised if you've been watching news for the last 9 months.
Just existing in the world at all in the past year, yeah. This year's prize ceremony, conducted online, centred around bugs. There's lots of bug theming in the webcast itself. There's people wearing bowflies as bow ties, and lots of other bugs make appearances. There's an opera, there's bug stuff happening. There's also some bug winners in the prizes, but more on those later. First things first. The Ig Nobel Prizes for 2020 celebrate research and researchers from all over the world whose investigations into life and the world around us makes us laugh, then makes you think. I feel that's encapsulated most in the first prize that was given out this year, the Acoustics Prize, which went to a team from Austria, Sweden, Japan, the USA, and Switzerland, who conducted a very interesting and very specific and possibly quite dangerous investigation involving alligators and helium.
Specifically, they induced a female Chinese alligator, that's Alligator sinensis, to bellow in an airtight chamber, inhaling either normal air or a helium-oxygen mixture. Their goal in doing this, which, you know, took a little bit of reading to kind of find out, is see if, like many other animals, the vocalizations of crocodilians can be used by other members of their species to form some conclusions about how big the animal shouting is.
Think of deep dog barks compared to little yappy chihuahuas.
Think of close harmony, 60s boy bands famous for their close harmonies where the really tall guy
was the bass.
The super bassy dude. And how sometimes when a tall man talks and he's got a really high voice, you're like, what?
So, if big animal of any species means low voice, is that true for alligators as well? The female Chinese alligator being smaller than males, I suppose, is the...
Oh no, with reptiles, typically the female is larger. They only worked with one alligator, but testing in the inhaling just oxygen or the oxygen-helium mixture, these qualities called formant frequencies, which are vocal tract resonances, the pitch changed upward with the helium-oxygen mix while other frequencies in the vocalization didn't change. And from this, they have concluded that those formant frequencies do reflect body size in these animals.
And we have some of those recordings here. You have the grunting in an oxygen-rich environment first, followed by the helium-rich environment. And depending on how you're listening to this, through speakers on your laptop or through headphones or through a different listening environment, you may pick up on some different resonant frequencies. And if you want to see an example of what the kind of researchers who would experiment on an alligator by putting it in a helium-filled tank look like, have a look at the webcast for this. It is exactly what you think those researchers would look like. There's so much weird stuff on the wall. It's fantastic.
Biologists make some, like... No, in fact... Every scientist we know has made some choices with regards to their home and personal decoration, which really sell their brand. what I really like is the little comment at the end of the abstract. Because birds and crocodilians share a common ancestor with all dinosaurs, a better understanding of their vocal production systems may also provide insight into the communication of extinct archosaurians. Those are the common ancestor. I like that. It's like, oh, we made an alligator shout. And we're hoping to be able to use this research to talk about pre-dinosaurs.
These researchers should end up with a credit on the next Jurassic Park film for improving our understanding of what dinosaurs might sound like. Possibly. But also, they just filled a crocodile full of helium, and that's also fun.
An alligator! She was an alligator! I've been trying to get you with this all morning!
Well, let's see if I can learn something, perhaps, not from crocodilians and alligators, but from the Psychology Prize. A team from Canada and America won this one. In fact, the researchers were specifically Miranda Giacomin and Nicholas Rule, who have apparently devised a method to identify narcissists by examining their eyebrows.
Now, what's interesting is that in the abstract for this research, they have not laid out qualities that narcissists' eyebrows have, but that when people are making an assessment of what they think of someone based on their facial features, they can most reliably work it out based on eyebrow distinctiveness. I mean, I'm interested in how well this applies over time, because eyebrow grooming is very, very tied to fashion. You watch stuff from the 90s now and everyone's got these like pencil thin eyebrows, and then Cara Delevingne happened and everyone started growing their eyebrows out and looking for serums to make their eyebrows thicker. You know, you go back to like Imperial China and fancy people in court there were plucking their eyebrows into perfect circles.
Circles?
Yeah. That dot eyebrow thing is a ancient Chinese fashion thing.
Huh. It's only as a fashion choice for Nicholas Rule to receive his award alongside Miranda Giacomin on webcam, covering up his eyebrows entirely with some tape. You can go and have a look at that. It's about 15 minutes into the webcast, but what does that say about his potential narcissistic personality disorder if we just don't get to see his eyebrows at all and they're just for him?
Maybe he's got them tattooed on already.
Next up is the Peace Prize, which made me laugh out loud when I first read it, and you've probably heard of before if you've received digital news in the last couple of years, because this doesn't come from any specific team of researchers or scientists or institutes, but does instead go to the diplomatic ambassadors for India and Pakistan. The reference here is to numerous news reports that diplomats from India and Pakistan would surreptitiously ring each other's doorbells in the middle of the night, then run away before anyone had a chance to answer the door. And for two countries that have spent the last decade or two on a kind of nuclear brinksmanship game, this feels so refreshingly juvenile in the year 2020 that it really does warm my heart.
It's like, yeah, we might completely destroy each other or everyone else in our battle over a small strip of land, but also...
ding-dong ditching.
Now I'm interested. I think I saw a Twitter thread about this the other day. Is ding-dong ditch what you would call this game? Because I'd call it cherry-knocking, even though in this case they're not knocking.
To me, the act of ringing a doorbell makes it a ding-dong ditch, whereas cherry-knocking is specifically knocking. It's much more about the medium than the message there.
Okay, but if you and your school friends as children were playing this game, what would you have called it?
I think it would have been cherry knocking at the time.
Mm.
Mm. Now, for those of you listening to this along with the webcast, you will have already heard part one of the Ig Nobel opera for this year, which played into the theme of bugs by having a short opera conducted across the session about a cockroach who wakes up believing himself to be a man who believes himself to be a cockroach, and then leading a kind of bug-based revolution in the world.
Mm, Kafka-esque.
Very much. And also, it would now be time for some of the 24/7 lectures, in which there are 24 seconds in which a researcher, a past Nobel laureate, delivers some important and very edifying research as articulately as possible, and then summarizes it in 7 words. Rather than repeating all of that out loud for you, you should go and watch it on their webcast, and we will keep rolling into the Physics Prize, another international team this time, who have done some work which, again, you should really be watching the webcast for this for, because they discuss it with such delight and also wiggliness, because they buzzed some earthworms to see what shapes they made. They just put some earthworms on a plate and made it go bop, 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 to see if the worms' bodies would change shape and what kind of shape they changed into. Kind of just to see what would happen. Yeah. And that's the pure science. That's the deep heart of the scientific method is what happens when machine go burr. And I really appreciate their work there.
To quote from the abstract for this research, biological cells and many living organisms are mostly made of liquids, and therefore, by analogy with liquid drops, they should exhibit a range of fundamental non-linear phenomena such as the onset of standing surface waves. Here we test four common species of earthworm to demonstrate that vertical vibration of living worms lying horizontally on a flat solid surface results in the onset of subharmonic Faraday-like body waves.
Earthworm go burr.
You vibrate the earthworm go blah, 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 blah. Moving on to our economics prize, awarded to a team of researchers from the UK, Poland, France, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Australia, Italy, and Norway, for trying to quantify the relationship between different countries' national income equality and the average amount of mouth-to-mouth kissing. There is cultural variation in the amount of mouth-to-mouth kissing, which happens in the context of a romantic relationship. And this research has established that in countries with higher income equality, people snog more.
Where inequality is, romance is not.
Lack of snogging does not equal lack of romance.
That's true.
There are plenty of non-snog ways of expressing romantic intimacy.
Maybe they'll be doing some follow-up investigations into hand-holding, going on dates in the park.
Doing one another's makeup.
Ordering takeout. Not for any special reason, just because. But speaking of things that lots of people do, the management prize goes to a team, again, not of researchers this time, but a chain of Chinese hitmen who were individually subcontracted one after the other, after the other, after the other, to conduct a hit for a smaller and smaller slice of the pie on how much money would be paid for killing someone in question, and then wound up with none of them doing it. You may have also seen this again on international news. There's a picture of five or six men stood side by side in a courtroom, all of them looking very upset that A, no one's got paid, and B, no one's dead, and C, they've got caught for not doing the job that they've accepted for less money than the guy stood next to them. It's a real Coen Brothers kind of vibe.
It really is, isn't it? And I really like the cadence of the very dry way that it has been discussed. After accepting payment to perform the murder, Xi Guang An then instead subcontracted the task to Mo Tian Zhang, who then instead subcontracted the task to Yang Kang Sheng, who then instead subcontracted the task to Yang Guang Sheng, who then instead subcontracted the task to Ling Zhan Shi, with each subsequently enlisted hitman receiving a smaller percentage of the fee and nobody actually performing the murder.
I wonder if the intended target didn't find out about this until the day of the court case. Like, oh, they were all about to kill me, but nobody did.
I think it's entirely possible that the intended target never found out at all.
That's like the opposite of Final Destination.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never destination.
They were destined to not die. Mm.
Fate intervened in the form of five inept hitmen. I don't want to say inept, because they could be very good at their jobs, but five business-minded hitmen who let business get in front of business.
Five hitmen who were, I mean, just too busy to do it. I think, you know, the sort of path of least resistance on this one is every single one of these five people, when they received the job, was like, actually, I'm a bit too busy to do that this week. Let me call my mate.
I'm sure there's somebody on Fiverr I can find for this.
I bet there is a Fiverr for hitmen on the dark web.
Imagine being the last guy, though. Imagine being Ling Xianxi, who finds out eventually that what you're going to be paid the equivalent of like $200-300 for originally was a multi-£1,000 hit, and you've settled for pennies.
Still didn't do it, though, so it's not like you've actually lost the money.
Well, true.
Well, maybe that's the problem, is Ling Xianxi was not going to receive enough money to make it worth his time. So he just shopped the rest of them, and
When you find out that you've been shafted in such a way, you probably would try and find some vengeance, but not ideally the one that ends up with you in jail as well.
We're queer.
We're geeks.
We're queeks.
Superheroes, Star Wars,
Broadway, Drag Race.
So if you're super gay,
super nerdy,
or anything in between, listen to Queeks today.
Wherever fine podcasts are sold.
And find us on Instagram at Queeks Podcast.
Anyway, less about assassination, more about arachnids in the Entomology Prize, which goes to Richard Vetter from the USA for collecting evidence that entomologists, brackets, scientists who study insects, are afraid of spiders, which are not insects.
That's many entomologists, not all entomologists.
Enough entomologists are scared of spiders. And coming back to what we mentioned earlier about the design choices of biologists and researchers in kind of biological fields, have a look at Richard Vetter's house and his hat. Fantastic choices happening here.
I'm just thinking of the many scientists who, when someone says, "Ooh, what do you do for a living?" just sort of extend their arms and go, "Here are the various aspects of my discipline that I have had permanently inscribed in my skin."
It would not surprise me if Richard Vetter had arachnid or insect-based tattoos, because he's got a lot of arachnid and insect-based paraphernalia around his house and on his head. But the difference between insects and arachnids highlighted in this paper really comes down to a quite Orwellian version of six legs good, eight legs bad.
There's very much a difference in the way that things move with six legs than with eight legs. And like, I'm generally neutral about most insects. I'm generally negative about spiders. Somehow it comes back round again, and I'm very fond of woodlice, which have 14 legs. And pretty much neutral on centipedes and millipedes, which have, you know, many more legs.
Maybe there's a maths to it. 6 is divisible by 3, an odd number. 8 is not divisible by an odd number. 14 is divisible by 7, which is an odd number.
That is possible.
How do you feel about sea urchins? Pretty much all feet, except the feet are stiletto heels.
Are you thinking more of sea stars than sea urchins?
Possibly.
Pretty well neutral.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not fond of spiders. I'm not fond of mites and ticks and stuff.
Scorpions?
Scorpions I'm fairly neutral on.
Hmm.
I've not really met them in real life.
Hmm.
And I do yell when we spot one in Animal Crossing, but that's usually because they just, like, appear out of nowhere. Anyway, yes, the extra pair of legs on spiders as opposed to insects does appear to make a big difference to the archaeologists who responded to this.
Archaeologists? I hate it when you crack open a tomb and it's full of spiders. Really hate that. Oh.
The entomologists who responded to this call for information. And arachno-adverse entomologists appear to share traits with arachnophobes in the general public.
The trait being, I don't like spiders.
Yes. Arachno-adverse reactions, often starting at a young age, weren't generally overcome through habituation even after decades of exposure to insects. Although in the general public, arachnophobia and a negative reaction to disgust-evoking animals, which I think is a good general term, although I'm wondering if they are including the sort of, you know, other animals which evoke disgust, such as an amphibian, which I won't get into any more detail about because it deeply upsets you.
You've already mentioned it, though, and that's...
enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's enough.
Remember that map of emotion we talked about in episode 20-something where different emotions were pinned on, like,
the sound
a 2D map?
Yeah.
And, like, fear and disgust were separate, linked, but separate emotions. Like, there's things that you can be scared of and things that you are disgusted by. I'm not scared of the Suriname toad, but I am deeply, physically revulsed in thinking about it.
Yes, and that feeling of revulsion is linked to trypophobia, which has otherwise been a disgust reaction rather than a fear reaction. But yes, disgust evoking animals and arachnophobia, negative reaction to these are correlated in the general public, but entomologists who work with non-charismatic insects do still experience arachnophobia.
The delineation between charismatic and non-charismatic. I'm sure there are some very charming insects out there, but they're not, you know, charismatic.
I think we'd call butterflies charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd call dragonflies charismatic. I think we might even call mantises charismatic.
I'd say a giant wetter has a lot of charisma.
Yeah. Yeah. But an earwig?
Anti-charismatic, then.
Revolting.
Mm. And if you'd like to see an application of arachno-averse reactions in the real world, check out some news coverage of the recent video game Grounded, in which you play as a teen who's been shrunk down to tiny size in a garden in a very honey-I-shrunk-the-blank kind of way, to avoid any arachnophobes in the audience being put off by having to be predated upon by a giant spider. In the settings, there is a spider slider, where you can turn down how spidery the spider that would come and get you is.
And that goes from, you know, a highly detailed spider with all its joints and bristling hairs and multiple pairs of eyes, all the way down to a couple of blobs.
Essentially a space hopper. Just an orb coming at you.
Yeah, I think the video game industry as a whole should take this on board and incorporate more accessibility sliders into their games.
Speaking of accessibility, the Medicine Prize goes to a team from the Netherlands and Belgium for their research into something that has affected me personally, and I do appreciate the work they've done around this, concerning misophonia. In two papers, they have identified the diagnostic criteria for this new psychiatric disorder, and also that it might be treated with cognitive behavioural therapy for people who feel distress at hearing other people make chewing sounds.
Misophonia doesn't just affect chewing sounds. That is kind of the textbook example that people use, but essentially lots of people experience a very strong reaction to certain sounds, which can include disgust and impulsive aggression. This is commonly things like eating noises, sniffling gets me. Sometimes when people do like a particular voice, it'll set people off. It's been known about anecdotally and named misophonia within groups of sufferers who've found one another for a good long while. But in 2013, this team did some research, did a write-up and put forward that it should be recognised as a distinct psychiatric disorder of its very own, and published that in PLOS One.
Hopefully, listeners of this podcast will note that I take out as much breathing, as much mouth noise, as much evidence that I have a human physical form as possible, because listening back to it when I'm editing this makes me go, oh, I don't like that, no, I'll have to cut it out. And I've just professionally been making a podcast about kind of healthy living and diet advice, which features a lot of people eating as they talk, and that has been, well, it's like nails on a chalkboard to me. I also don't like the sound of nails on chalkboards. Friction, grating, scraping. When you file your nails, I curl up into a ball.
Yeah, you do. Mm-hmm. I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it.
Mm-hmm. So, therapy for me. For this and for so many reasons, but firstly, for this. Just two more prizes to go, which means that now is the time for us to mention that if you have enjoyed our show and want to help support us and help us keep the show going, then you can find us at patreon.com/EurekaNerd and pitch in just a couple of bucks a month to help us offset the cost of hosting, production, all the equipment that we've got, keep doing what we're doing, and your help could make that happen.
We don't have any reward tiers set up for that currently, but we are taking suggestions.
If you would like to watch my face as I listen to upsetting noises, then you can suggest that. If you want to watch Leah's face watching eight-legged freaks, then you can suggest that.
You can suggest it. I won't agree to it. If you'd just like to hear my opinions about something, then you can continue listening to this podcast. But if you'd like to specify what it is, then maybe suggest that on Patreon. I don't know.
You can always find us on Facebook, /EurekaNerd, and on Twitter, at EurekaNerdcast. If you have any comments or suggestions, then you can send them our way at EurekaNerdcast@gmail.com.
That's EurekaNerdcast@gmail.com.
And our thanks do go to the Improbable Research team for all of the good work they do with the Ig Nobel Prizes. Now, the Ig Nobel Prizes have had to move online this year, which also means they haven't been able to sell any tickets to their event. So they do have a fundraiser going on their website. Please do consider donating if you can to help keep the awards going and all of their impressive, improbable research communications keep being part of our world that way. Keep it up, and we hope to see you in the real world doing real life events, hopefully next year. And you can find them at Improb Research on Twitter as well.
And now let's wrap up these last couple of prizes.
The Materials Sciences Prize to a team from the USA and the UK, showing that knives manufactured from frozen human feces do not work well.
I love this one. I clicked over to the research. I was like, why are they trying to make a knife?
What does that even
from
mean?
Frozen poo?
Who would even do that?
There is apparently a legend of an Inuit man freezing his poo to make a knife in order to do some butchery, which is held up as an example of the resourcefulness of indigenous and Arctic peoples. Some experimental archaeologists...
That's a hell of a title, isn't it? Experimental archaeology.
I mean, it's a field I have a lot of respect for.
Experimental. It's a field that I don't want to mess with if they're going to do this.
I mean, they do all sorts of... They make a lot of weapons, experimental archaeologists. Mm. But they also, you know, they do lots of cooking. They make gloves. They enlist the help of hairdressers to recreate bizarre Roman hairstyles.
And they may shank you with the poop.
But yes, a group of experimental archaeologists went, that doesn't seem likely, does it? The ice? Ice knife. Frozen poo knife. Really? And indeed, they established that the only way to make the frozen poo knife effective at disarticulating and butchering dead bodies was under very, very controlled experimental conditions, as opposed to, you know, just out on the tundra.
And lastly,
the Medical Education Prize awarded to Jair Bolsonaro of Brazil, Boris Johnson of the United Kingdom, Narendra Modi of India, Andre Manuel López Obrador of Mexico, Alexander Lukashenko of Belarus, Donald Trump of the USA, Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey, Vladimir Putin of Russia, and Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedow of Turkmenistan for using the COVID-19 viral pandemic to teach the world that politicians can have a more immediate effect on life and death than scientists and doctors can. Thank you very much, Improbable Research, for not pulling your punches.
What a year.
What a year.
So our thanks again to the Improbable Research team for putting together one hell of a show. But until next time, it's bye-bye from me.
And goodbye from me. This podcast is brought to you by the Stimulus Network.
Physical Attraction is the show that explains physics, science, and technology. From the existential threats to humanity, to the impact of technologies on our society, through to the fundamental physics that lies behind it all, we'll take you on a trip through nuclear fusion, neutron stars, artificial intelligence, and quantum mechanics. From interviewing experts to intricately researched narrative episodes, Physical Attraction strives to explain fundamental questions about how the universe works and where the world is going. You can find Physical Attraction at www.physicspodcast.com, on social media as PhysicsPod, and wherever you listen to podcasts. www.physicspodcast.com